Welcome to Clock Choke, a grappling culture podcast by Shoiro. Another episode of Clock Choke. Today we catch up with Holick Gracie, calling in from Costa Rica. We talk a little bit about Holick growing up as a Gracie, putting his creative spin on Metamorris, changing the game a little bit, and also just diving into being a dad and learning more about life and perspective from the past 10 years plus. So let's jump right in. Holick, thank you so much, man, for jumping on the podcast. I'm super duper excited to have you on.
Man, thank you. And it's an honor and much respect. And you know, this jiu-jitsu thing, man, you know, I see what you're doing and I appreciate it. And, you know, it's all good.
So what you've been up to, man? I mean, I'm so used to like, there's very few kind of like crazy people in the space that have like wild ideas that we think about consistently. So, you know, when you were a lot more active, it was kind of nice to have you in the space because I could kind of like bounce off of stuff off of the vibe stuff that you were doing. But then also the stuff that you were doing was kind of like on the same wavelength that we appreciated. So how have you been, man? And what have you been up to? How's life been as a dad and what else is going on?
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate that. And it's good to hear that. And I know, you know, I feel that and I feel the sense of like who's creating, who's contributing, you know, and I feel that inspiration and right back at you. And, you know, it's, man, I would say at this point, you hear the kids in the background, it's been about family, man. And then, you know, just coming off of just the whole Metamorris, call it like a takeoff, a ride and a crash, just that whole experience coming off of that has been just so like, so enriching, you know. It sounds kind of cliche, but it's been so good just living life and starting to understand more about humanity and myself and the people around me. And, you know, my focus has really been people, like really understanding people, like relative to myself, and also like just people who have been in my orbit and kind of the way that things have progressed, you know, throughout my experiences. And it's been incredibly humbling, you know, and I just feel good, man. I feel very like my soul feels better than I've ever felt, you know? And I think like one of the things that like I was talking to my wife about is just how like I realized looking back that it just in the short amount of time that I've kind of been involved, called it like in the public sphere, or even just being kind of having the pressure of feeling like I want to do anything. And looking back, I felt like one of the big things that kind of was bothering me was just being on a deep level, kind of having respect from people without really deserving it, you know, and like kind of being in a place where just being a Gracie, like we grew up in the academy with people coming into the academy and being like, you're a Gracie, you're Hickson's nephew, you're Hoyce's nephew, you know, you're Horion's son. And like, they look at you like this, like with this gleaming light. And you're like, yo, I didn't do anything yet. I'm 8 years old. You know what I mean? Like, and they're looking at you like, what the fuck? What are you, you know? And I'm just like, no, you like, whoa. And so I think from happening from so early, like we get this kind of mind fuck, you know? And I realized like now looking back that early on, I was very much like disenchanted with that whole idea. And I knew that looking back, I knew that it was inevitable that I would kind of push myself off a cliff, you know, to where I would have to like be on my own and I would have to understand life without all of this gassing up and all this whole like kind of weird kind of future potential energy and just being around people that just see me for who I am and that whole kind of really grounding atmosphere, you know, which is something that I think in my soul, I hadn't really attained until the last couple years. And it feels amazing.
You talked about being away and kind of being a dad and kind of like reflecting a little bit on some of the stuff that you've done. And I think you've also like I would kind of say that you've kind of carved a path for yourself and kind of made it your own and building it the way you wanted to build it, maybe a lot different than maybe some, you know, the rest of the family's done it. And I can't even imagine what kind of pressure it is to kind of be the first family of jujitsu in a sense. But like, dude, you like beat Sakuraba, like for you know, for every jujitsu person in the world that was like into MMA, like, you know, everybody was like waiting for the person to beat Sakuraba. So like the jujitsu people around the world could like celebrate, you know? So, I mean, like just kind of riffing off some stuff you said, like that was like, you basically, jujitsu won in that period of time when we lost for, you know, the 5 years or 10 years before that, whatever the time went. But like, how was that for you? Like, because you're talking about, you know, building yourself and like, putting yourself in a place where you're like, hey, I know I'm born with this, but like, let me work here a little bit. Like, and we'll jump into the metamor stuff later, but specifically for that one moment, that was a huge moment. Like, and people don't like, people forget. So like, that was huge. How was that for you?
Yeah. Yeah, the competing, the fighting in MMA at that time, interestingly, it was me kind of being who I was supposed to be. And it felt like my first fight was in 2006, I think, 2007. And I fought this guy who was kind of an up and coming, like rising star in Japan. He had been a wrestling sensation and they were building him up. He was this younger Katsuyori Shibata, this younger cat. And they wanted to build him like the next Sakuraba, I felt. And there was kind of this whole energy of like, man, let's bring this Gracie in, you know. And going in and fighting in that fight, I was pure Halleck Gracie representing the legacy in my mind, in my spirit, in everything. I was like going 100%. There was no doubt. There was no nothing. After I won the fight, I was very depressed because I realized that I was doing something that was supposed to happen. Like, it was too easy. And I had been given every tool to make that happen. And so I felt like I didn't actually deserve it because there was no real, like, there was nothing that I really willed into place, you know? And so the fight game for me has always felt like if I go down that road, I'm taking the easy money, you know, like I'm taking the easy route. Until now, like where I'm at spiritually now, I'm more ready to compete just for myself, actually. But going into Sakuraba, there was, That fight specifically was very empowering and very spiritual for me. So everything kind of leading up to that fight and then that fight happening, it was all just so spiritual and so much like it was very empowering. And it kind of gave me a lot of a sense of like, okay, I was there and I was in the ring with someone who is a real, real, real warrior. And I felt like just blessed to be there. You know, I felt like, and it didn't really matter win or lose. And I don't actually think I won because I didn't finish the fight, right? Like he didn't tap, he didn't give up. So technically in my rule book, if someone doesn't give up or the fight doesn't end with a knockout or something, you didn't really win the fight, right? There's so many potential outcomes still. And given he wasn't in his prime and stuff, but I think more than anything, I took so much away from that spiritually and just felt like a lot of things kind of connected me within that fight to myself. But it still was the coming home from Japan and getting like 300 text messages. Yeah, you're the best. Yeah, you know, this is like, shit, congrats, da, da, da. It always was just like, oh, like, if I, you know what I mean? What if I lost? Like, what if I got the, like, what if I got the L? Or like, what if I didn't? And then not only that, like, I'm supposed to do this. You know what I mean? Like, this is supposed to happen. Everything was supposed to make this possible. Why is everybody so surprised? Like, why am I getting all this love? Like, it was a very weird thing for me mentally to have to overcome, you know? And, but the message for me was, you need to get out of competing because it's too much. It's too much about you. It's too small. It's too selfish. And you need to contribute in a bigger way. You need to do something else and use this information and use this knowledge of this really high-end, like warrior-esque kind of experience and training camp. And you need to extrapolate that and go somewhere else. And so that was the message. And that's where I was like, I'm, you know, I'm pretty much done with fighting at this point. And, you know, and that's where like Metamoris came from, that really. And just having more kids and like realizing like, I need to really be, in order for me to do something for myself and like kind of take my own credit, I have to go in another direction and I have to challenge myself and really go there. And I don't want to say like I'm just completely downplaying the fight thing, because I don't think like it's not that. Like, I'm not sitting here like, oh dude, like I know it sounds a little bit ungrateful, or it sounds like I'm not accepting the fact that I'm just a Gracie and I should be happy about it. Like, that's part of it. But part of it is just like, at the end of the day, like, you have to be right, like really, really, really deep. You have to be right with yourself, you know? And that's where I felt like I did that. It was amazing. It was very spiritually, it was very freeing. It gave me a lot of energy, but then it was also like, you need something more grounding still. You're not really grounded. And so that's where like come into testing myself as a businessman, testing myself in terms of bringing more people together to actually try to like bring more energy to more people and create more flow and like have a bigger kind of influence. That was where, you know, I felt like I was going. But yeah, man, like that fight, walking in, I remember feeling like Sakuraba literally does this for breakfast. And like, I was taking it way too seriously. Like, I wasn't on his level. He was being the thing, you know what I mean? And like, I was just a little, like, I was just getting started. And so that was a trip. Like, I literally remember that as a visual, just going, oh, like, all right, much respect. And so it was just 100% respect for that man ultimately. Right. And yeah, it was amazing.
Dude, like before we jump right into the Metamorphosis and the grappling stuff, like I just wanted to touch a little bit about like growing up in jiu-jitsu, like from your perspective specifically, because I think like your path I think is super fascinating to me because you're creative, you have a vision when it comes to like the way you want things to happen in your head. And I would say like 90% of people probably don't operate in the mind space that you operate from like a disruption and also from like a creativity standpoint. So I'm just curious on yours, like your head, kind of where your head was at as a kid growing up, kind of like saying, hey, this is what we have to do. This is what we were born to do. But then creatively, and just like what you think of like saying, hey, you know, I kind of ran that MMA thing. I did that part. Now I'm going on to this next part, but just kind of taking it back. How was it for you as a kid growing up around all this stuff and then kind of taking it all the way through?
Yeah. So I like early on, I had to fight. Like I knew I was going to fight very early on. And I knew just seeing Hoyce, seeing Hickson, seeing the stories, like talking, you know, every day at the academy, the conversations, it was always like, you're going to fight, you're going to fight, you're going to test, you're going to prove, you're going to represent, it was very, very, very real to me. Like I embodied it. Like it was so real to me in terms of being a necessity and being something that, you know, that I was going to do. And at the same time, I was already kind of on many tangents artistically. So I had already had a mind of wanting to combine my artistic notions of the world, you know? So I was already making music by like 10 years old. I was producing music. And, you know, now looking back, I realized like music was very much like a therapy and very much like it was a way for me to be a warrior kind of internally and find that space. And I always liked that. I always liked that balance because everything was so hardcore. Everything was so external and fighting and everything. And, you know, so it ended up being a really nice balance. And then I got into like videography and like a lot of photography. And so I was always kind of interested in just capturing moments and very much like had that influence of like from friends and people that I would be attracted to. Like there was a music producer, West, who started at the Academy back in the day. And I was probably 13, 14. So I always felt like I was diversifying by nature, you know? And I think I explained that, like looking back now, I realized that I had a mind of wanting to create balance within multiple fields, but as a test to myself. So it was always like kind of throwing myself off balance so that I could understand myself more deeply and know thyself, right? Like that's it. And it's like to the real, like you'll just kind of risk it to see what happens. And then the outcome is going to be some kind of lesson, which is jujitsu also, right? Which is any martial art, like you test your balance so that you can find your pathway to where you can actually execute in the future. And so, yeah, man, like that was growing up with that. I'm really grateful for the discipline. Like my dad was very disciplined with like food and like drink and things that were very basic that I didn't see like a lot of my friends doing. You know, it was always, you know, there was a lot more like chaos in terms of basic stuff. Whereas in our family, it seemed very samurai. It seemed very like disciplined. There was always this like focus of you got to be ready. You have to be willing to go in and train and fight somebody possibly, or be ready to just train hard every day and, you know, come in on Monday and go hard. And like that kind of mentality always keeps you really sharp, keeps you really, really, you know, focused on your body and how you feel and your health and all that. So really grateful for all that. And, you know, but I think this notion of being like praised for something that you haven't done is really tricky, you know? And I think everyone who has any kind of legacy or who comes from any kind of position of power or leverage, they have that blind spot, you know, where now all of a sudden you have to put yourself in the hole to actually figure out what, you know, what your boundaries are, what your personal limitations are, and kind of move from there, you know? So, yeah.
That's a super duper interesting perspective, Holly, because I think like, it's like people normally, you said something key, and I think you said blind spot. And I think now you like, did you always know that was a blind spot? Because normally people don't figure that stuff out till later. You know, if you come from something, right, you just think that's how it is. But like, when did you realize that you had a blind spot? And when did you start to say, hey, I need to start like, you know, altering this or checking it or growing from it, whatever that may be?
Yeah, I think I'm very much a people person. And so what I did was I just started like choosing, I would just spend more time with people, you know, that I would get kind of a more basic response from, basic in the sense that they would kind of just treat me like anybody else. And I could sense that. And they were usually pretty good friends, you know, and somebody who kind of just, they didn't worry about it. You know, like my cousin Trevor is on my mom's side, my aunt Claudia's son. And we were like road dogs. Like we would go and just get into all kinds of trouble and, you know, sneak into the school at night and mess with the security guard and do stuff like that. Like we were always kind of on the same page in terms of like trying to do cool stuff and get the new skateboard with the big wheels and try to go off road and do. So we were always like, you know, on the same page in terms of wanting to be explore. And so we had like those, I had those like common friends who we just did regular things and life was good, you know? But in the academy, I could tell that it was always like, all right, you know, I'm just getting a huge amount of love here that I don't deserve, you know? And ultimately the thing about it though, is that it does feel good to a certain extent. So it's easy to kind of be like, oh yeah, I'll take more of this today. Like, that's good. It makes my ego feel good. Like, cool. And you kind of can't help it to a certain degree. Like, you're just getting a flood of people who are like, oh yeah, cool, cool. Like, dude, this, you know, man, what's up? Like, what do you do for, you know, what kind of underwear do you wear? It's like, bro, what? Like, do you get some boxer briefs, you know, like shit will hold your package. Like, it's good. So that's kind of like and you just, you know, you start to see it as you get older and as you surround yourself with more people who just kind of see you for who you are. And so I kind of went through that process, and that was when I really kind of started. In many ways, I was already kind of separated from the Gracie Academy at that time, like the business and the whole thing. It was already kind of happening. And at that point, like, as I started to get older and get into my teenage years and stuff, I still had the mindset of like competing and training. And, you know, so that was really important to me. The teaching aspect was important to me, but was like less important because I felt like I wasn't, you know, like I still had a lot to prove. I still had a lot of like, you know, of like my own testing to do and that process. So, but we grew up teaching very early too. So, which is cool. And it has a lot of pros as well to just getting that responsibility. And
so Holic, on that, talking on that, do you think that took you to a place of taking you into creating Metamorphs and that next phase of your life and creating something within the sport and the art and the culture from where you were before?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it did, man. I think without me knowing even as much as I do now, like I think Metamorphs. So Rob Zepps was a private student of mine at the time. And we were like, oh yeah, we should, you know, there's a lot of space here in jiu-jitsu and we should do something. And so that's where Metamorphs came from. And that still was like, I'm kind of getting this opportunity because I'm a Gracie and I'm, you know, it all seemed a little too easy until after Metamorphs 2, where he backed out. And I was pretty much like, all right, we got to make Eddie Bravo and Hoyler Gracie happen. But at this point, I'm now the solo CEO and I got to like move forward. And so that was like a big kind of step and phase for me in terms of just, you know, and it was a big step in the sense that it was a step that I didn't even really realize. I didn't actually know the danger and the pressure that I was under. I knew that it was tough. I knew that, you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen and I didn't know whether Metamorphs 3 was even going to come to fruition, but I didn't know how much of a disadvantage we had by having Rob walk away and take all the money with him, you know? And I felt like at the time, like, oh man, you know, we have this energy already. We can just kind of make it work. And the thing that I see again with more hindsight is that like it wasn't, I was in the mindset where I just wanted to take the game to a new level. Like my whole mindset was we have to break all the barriers. That's it. Like if we're not doing that, we're wasting our time. Like it might as well just go do another business. I might as well just go like, you know, and you can see how that can be very dangerous, especially when you don't have a master's degree in business, you know? So I'm kind of going off of energy, and I'm going off of, we're getting this certain response. We're testing it out. We're going to push into Metamorphs 3. And then Metamorphs 3 happens and I get this confirmation, but it was like a false confirmation, because it was like, oh shit, we sold out in 20 minutes using the show your role sales technique of limited seating, you know, by now. And we sold out, you know, and like, that was a sense of like, oh man, we're good. But really that was just Gracie versus Bravo. And then it's like, well, how are you going to sustain this business for the next 10 years, 20 years? Like, I wasn't of the mindset where I was going to be capable of doing that at that point. And for many reasons, one of them being, I have to continue to push the boundaries. The other one being just having the knowledge of how many like difficult questions that I never even, I'm going to think to ask, need to be asked and need to be figured out to even like get to the point where we can do the things that I imagine doing very deep down, which is breaking new barriers and taking the game to a whole other level, you know, where we can actually justify paying athletes large sums of money for jujitsu matches. Yeah, and there it is.
I think like even me watching from afar and going to some of these things, and I've been watching jiu-jitsu in California probably specifically for like the last 20 years, pretty heavy. It was one of those things where it was art in a sense, where it broke all the boundaries down, and it was almost like too good to be true, because like it was almost perfection, right? Like in all honesty, like the first one was like almost perfection enough to where I was like, wow, like I can't wait for the next one. But then in my head, I was like, will there really be a next one? And will it really be this good? Because everything was done right. You know, everything that could have been done right was done right and executed at a really, really, really high level. So like as a fan, just watching, it was unreal. Like it was just crazy. And like most people that are listening, some may know what Metamorphs was, but at the time it was this groundbreaking event that changed the face of the way that we look at the way that jiu-jitsu athletes compete and fight. And I think you know, you, Rob, just anybody involved like should get a ton of credit for kind of putting us in a position where we're at today as far as what jiu-jitsu events look like, because like, you know, it was an artistic, creative view on, I think, what you guys have done for the sport and what it is today. And, you know, whether that's the second one or the third one, like for me, what's interesting is like you said, Rob stepped away after the second or third one, whatever it may have been. And if I'm reading it right, you were purely on a lot more of the creative and visionary side on the first one, which is maybe even so much to say why it was that much more amazing, because maybe you mentioned something on the MBA side. You're not like an MBA in business, so like you probably were able to do some of this stuff, but I think you shined a lot on in the beginning, because it was you didn't have to deal with so much of that, and maybe you could clear up any of that stuff if that's true or not true, you know. But I appreciated it. So
yeah, the first Rob was not actually, this is the thing, we didn't have the business person. Rob was kind of the fan and I was the artist. We didn't have the business person, but we had the money to just throw the biggest jiu-jitsu party in the world, you know? So it was like, yes, like the fact that it came together and it ran and it looked the kind of the way that it did was, you know, I can take a fair amount of credit for that vision. There was obviously a lot of people behind it. We made huge mistakes financially and from a business perspective that, you know, and through the entire process, you know, so it was never like we had the people to really do, who had the experience to really take something from where we were to where we wanted to go in actuality, you know? So that's the part looking back where I'm like, we were very naive in terms of what we were actually getting into. And we got some like base level hype, but we needed a lot more than that to really take it to the next level, you know? And now like with just the people that I'm surrounded with now and the people that, and it's not like a bunch of new people, but I've met certain people and I've had conversations with people that I respect, where I'm now starting to figure out like so much of what makes something possible is like silent and is like unseeable. You know what I mean? It's not really like visual at all. And it's like a grind, and it's just the work, and it's just the certain kinds of things that get done that ultimately have value that, you know, so that's more of like the business piece, right? Like the experienced business person kind of just knows like there's certain basic things that need to get done for this to work. Everything else can look great and, you know, you guys can shine on all you want, but if these things aren't done right, everything is a bust. You know, and I think that's the big lesson, and that's the big part where, you know, I was very naive, honestly. And so, yeah, you know, like I feel like the only credit is that we kind of broke a wall down for a bunch of people to get inspired and say, okay, we can try to start paying athletes, and, you know, there's somewhat of a market for people who might pay something to get some athletes paid. And, you know, jujitsu maybe should be a little more sensationalized. And, you know, and so I think that's where it is, you know, and I think that's the thing with Metamoris. It was more of like a battering ram, you know.
It's interesting you say pay, because like the last podcast I did was with Joel Tudor, and we were talking about surfing and, you know, other things that specifically talk about like how, you know, these athletes kind of like make a living. But it's like, for me, it was like the first time when it was like, oh, this event's paying this. I was like, wow. Like, you know, and of course there was an event before that paid a certain marker. For me, it got to this point where I'm like, wow, like I'm just like everybody else. If the market can sustain, if businesses and production and events can afford to, you know, buy enough pay-per-views to float whatever the cost is, like, cool. Like that's cool. Athletes should get paid, you know? But if for whatever reason, like the event's not getting paid or breaking even, like, I just don't see how athletes can get paid $1,000 or $100,000, right? Like for me, that was just like, I was just one of those ones where I was like, man, like, do you think like it kind of like with time and kind of going back to what Tudor was saying, was just like, man, like athletes right now, like jiu-jitsu's big, but it's also very small. And it was something along the lines of like, you know, like athletes just have to be okay with like, you know, sometimes getting paid some cash, and then sometimes like getting paid like not that amount of cash, just because maybe viewership's not there, you know, maybe like 100 people are watching it or 1,000 people. It's not like 1 million or 100,000 people that would be watching like, you know, tennis or golf or, you know, of course way more than that. So what's your take on that from, you know, you coming in and actually trying to like set a marker really high. And I think like athletes in general, and that became like, okay, well, if we're going to do an event, we have to pay the same thing Metamoris is or whatever the other promotion is, as opposed to like, hey, let's just like put really good people there and just, you know, whether we pay them $1 or $1,000, we want to make sure we can support what we're doing here. So I'm just curious on that, just because of the last podcast with Tudor, you know, we were just talking, he was like, yeah, it's just like, sometimes we just have to be able to compete and not make any, people just can't, athletes can't get paid that much money, you know, for specific things, not for all things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so, this is where it's like so many elements, and like just being behind the scenes on Metamoris and kind of seeing the numbers and seeing the hype and seeing the athletes and seeing that it just kind of getting certain data points and also just having a feeling on it and reaching a glass ceiling, which we did, to where we were like, oh, we're not going to get past this certain number of pay-per-views, which is what you're talking about. Like there's only going to be a certain number of people who are going to watch, and it's not just going to continue on forever. And it can, but it would have to be in a much slower process. But yeah, there's so many aspects to that, to answering that question, that like, it's more of like, what's your personal take, you know, how do you actually, and that's another tricky thing about visionary people in general that I think a lot of people don't understand, is like, you kind of take a responsibility, and then it becomes like a crown of thorns, where you're like, now I've taken this burden. It's not just all roses, you know, like like now you have a responsibility, you have to show up, and you're going to have to kind of follow through with this idea. And I was determined to do that, you know, and I think it was more of a goal. It was more of like, hey, can we get athletes paid? And if we were going to do that, how would we do that? You know, so it was more of an action item, and it was more of like a vision and a dream to say, you know what? What can we actually do in terms of expressing the art, in terms of capturing the art, in terms of educating people to where we get enough of this baseline and we can justify growing a business and then in turn justify paying these athletes. And a big part of it is just education. It's just enough people understanding how significant it is in terms of like how difficult it is to pass someone's guard. Like, can you pass Bushesha's guard if you're a professional swimmer? It's impossible. Like you literally, you would have to catch him asleep and like in a coma for you to pass his guard. Even asleep, he would wake up like in 3 seconds and then you would not pass his guard. Like you would be gone. So like appreciating the difficulty, appreciating what's actually in front of you, you know, and this is where like, I think that's the big misnomer in terms of people saying like, oh, it's not exciting. It's not, it's like, well, golf is not inherently exciting either. Neither is tennis. Neither is, you know, it's kind of how you see it. And it's kind of how educated you are. Like you have to understand the rules. You have to understand the parameters of what goes into making that interesting. That's when you can actually start to have a dialogue. That's when you can actually start to get something from, you know, for your service, and you can provide this amazing service with all these amazing attributes and amenities. And then people can, you know, a growing list of people can appreciate it enough. And that's, you know, that was the thing that I was kind of on a path where I was going to determine the limit of that cohort, of that number of people that were educated enough about jiu-jitsu who were going to go, okay, I'm going to pay for this. You know, so we were determined to reach that. And then we were thinking, we need to get, like, if you're passionate about jiu-jitsu, we want your girlfriend to become passionate about jiu-jitsu. How is that going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, how is she going to go, okay, this is cool. Like, I want to watch more of this. And it's a very aggressive goal.
you're preaching to the choir, man. You're preaching to the choir. And I think like that's why I think that's where for me, I give you like so much love and respect, like regardless of everything, right? Like running a business, running a promotion, being like a visionary and trying to change like the way that athletes compete and they're being like, you know, the way that they're being interpreted by the average person. Like for me, you just said like, hey, how can I get your wife or girlfriend or friend to like understand this like this and maybe want to try the next jiu-jitsu class? Like that, like, of course, like you could do the same rule set or this and visualize it the same way it's been done like 100 years ago or 5 years ago, even, or 10 years ago. But like, that was a crazy goal, man. And I think like people don't get how hard that is, you know, like.
Well, yes. And actually now, so there's two ways to kind of do that ultimately, in my opinion at this point. And I'm sure there's other ways, but two ways that I'm going to focus on. One of them is time and enough people just bringing their girlfriends to a jiu-jitsu class and then them going, okay, cool. Which we know how long that can take. I don't, you know, but then there's the more aggressive approach, which is to put yourself in a position where now you're kind of breathing education into the wider world. and you're like testing that on every front that you have the capacity to do. And that's where you have, you have like an evolving technology landscape, you have an evolving, and this is where you get so many pillars of, you know, trajectory that could be out of alignment, that now you're trying to kind of line them up and you're balancing on them at the same time. And that's how I started to feel, was I was just like, holy shit, there's so many pillars. I have to jump from one to the other and keep my balance. And this shit's, you know, it's no joke. So that's where I started to just go, okay, we need to diversify. We need to have more ways of reaching people. We need to have more ways of people interacting with jiu-jitsu. Oh shit, I need more money. I need more investors. I need smart business people. And then by that point, it was too late. There wasn't enough momentum. And then it's like, now I look like I'm trying to, I need help. And then it's, that doesn't work in business. So then it's like all downhill, you know? And so it was a valiant effort. it was a beautiful learning experience, man. And this is where like, I come back to just like, it's all about people. It's all about people. And like, one of the biggest mistakes I made was like, I led certain people on without knowing it. Like, I was too naive to know that I needed to just be like, no, you're not going to get paid. You know what I mean? And like, I didn't actually know, like, I thought it was going to work out. So I was like, I put myself in a very weird situation with certain people. And with other people, I really learned a lesson on like, damn, these people already forgive me. And then I'm like, wait, what have they been through in their life? Like, why do they already see me in this horrible position that I'm in with so much pressure, just with a huge 25-foot wave, like crashing on my head? They're looking at me with a smile. Who are these people? You know what I mean? And that's where I started to see people like within my orbit and even out of my orbit, where now I'm like, okay, this is the kind of relationships that I want. Like, these are the people that I want to surround myself with. That's how I'm really going to go to the next level and make something from this tragedy, you know? And that's what I started to do, man. And I'm blessed. Like, there's so many amazing people. Like, there's some really smart people that I'm like, holy shit. Like, they have money. And it's not about money, but like, they're very successful in ways, and they're super humble, and they're super like easy to talk to, and you would never know they have money. And they're just like, certain, you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, and then I tell them my story and they're like, dude, welcome to the club. You know what I mean? And I'm like, all right, thank you. Let's go. On to the next one.
You're like, oh, you're not supposed to win everything. Like, you could fail at a bunch of shit. That's fuck. I wish I knew that.
And yes. And not only that, like, oh, that's what I've been doing in jiu-jitsu my whole life. Was walking into the academy and getting choked out by my older brothers and by my uncles and by my friends and people in the academy for, you know, 19 years. I was just getting choked out. You know what I mean? And now I can roll a little bit with some people, you know? So it's like, what does that mean? This shit took 20 years? Like, ah. And so my business sea legs were just kind of like barely kind of there, you know? And that's, now I'm like, oh, all right. It's beautiful, man. You know, well, life.
You definitely made an impact and changed the landscape of how we see jiu-jitsu on the big screen and how people interpret it visually, creatively. I think by far you've planted that seed, whether the event is still around or whether it's not around. Like, it, you did the work, man. And I respect all of the stuff that you've kind of positioned the new people to kind of come in the game and put their flair on it, you know. But I think,
thank you, bro. Yeah.
And that's honestly real. That's real. That's like not even fluff. It is what it is, you know. And if you didn't, I wouldn't. But like, it, like, you created something, and that is now the marker, right? And I think most people don't see that. They just see stuff being successful and being successful for X amount of years and never going away. But people forget, like, you know, those seeds need to be planted and they need to be watered. Some grow big, some die. But then they're also, now we know what the ceiling could be, or what we hope it to be. And kind of pivoting from there, man, how do you see jiu-jitsu now in your life? And what do you hope for it to be in the future, you know, in the space or just with you in general? I'm curious.
Yeah, man. I feel like the Tyrone Glover interview that you guys did. I really feel like Tyrone, where I'm now full circle with jujitsu as well. And like my martial arts and my training and myself as a martial artist. And I'm very much feeling like just really grateful for kind of everyone along the way who has contributed to that. And also just kind of being able to kind of step outside of it and then kind of look back at it. And then now kind of getting back in the boots and just kind of being in my jujitsu, you know, and being very zen with it and making it something that I can enjoy with my kids. And, you know, and that's another thing that kind of goes back to the earlier part of the discussion, is just like the thing with being a Gracie is that you kind of grow up with martial arts being like an enterprise and being this thing that's like half business, half personal, half, you know, I'll kill you, half we're best friends, half, you know. So it's this whole like dichotomy rush, you know, that I think it can be very destabilizing, you know. And I think I'm just grateful for the journey, man. And now coming back to kind of being able to just do jujitsu, like there's no expectations. You know, I think I want to just show up at a random tournament and compete and probably use a different name or something. Maybe not, but I think about that and just kind of show up and compete, you know, and just for fun and not have it be like I'm saving Metamoris and doing this match, or I'm going to get paid, or, you know, I'm trying to prove something, or, you know, so there were so many like strings attached that, you know, and that's where I say like in a lot of ways, like, you know, it's a crown of thorns, you know, and I think that's where. I don't know. I also feel like part of the younger generation, I look at like a lot of like the millennial attitude in myself, and I'm kind of disappointed, you know, like it's not like I'm ungrateful. It's just that like, I feel a responsibility to myself before anything. And I don't mean that like, oh, I'm the shit. It's more of like, I kind of have to be real about what I'm doing. And if I'm not, I'm going to do something else. Like, you know, and like I've trained other martial arts and over the years, and like just coming back to jujitsu, I'm very much like, man, this is, you know, it's very special and it's something that I need to kind of apply everything that I've been learning to and get feedback from and have that conversation and just be a kid again and train with people and say yes to training, you know, opportunities and like just walk into the gym and talk to people and just, you know, have respect and train hard. And, you know, that's, and like, I was training with Krohn for a bit, and really like Krohn really helped my jiu-jitsu a lot as well. And like just being in that environment and, you know, how intense he is and how much like, it just taught me so much, you know, about like how much you kind of want to, the respect for your partner is kind of really trying to beat them, you know, and like really accepting that and coming back to that and not just being like a teacher and a Gracie who has to be like coddling a student or like caring about, you know, what this is going to, is this going to work financially? Am I going to hurt my student? You know, forget all that. Just like, you need to kind of test your jujitsu. You need to be real with your jujitsu. Like, and then that's where like, now I actually feel like I have something to share. Like I can be, you know, like my jujitsu is now, that's why I say it's kind of come full circle, you know? So it's been amazing. How's your jujitsu journey?
Man, I'll tell you right now, like if like you change my name to Vince Bear Gracie, like I'm not going to hate on it. I'm just saying, like you, you know what I'm saying?
You bro,
say
you, don't want you. It. You don't want it, bro. You don't want it. Trust
me. I mean, I could rock that as my backup name if I needed to, you know. I could like, and you're trying to change your name to like Colic World Peace or something, and like
No. Stop. So actually real quick. So, this is what I'll say. My grandfather lived in his own way, testing his jujitsu, not pantering to anybody. You know what I mean? Like he had like the benefit of being Elu Gracie, but he was very much kind of innovating. And that's the thing is like, I'm not Elu Gracie. I'm his grandson and people know me as his grandson. So it's like, whoa, you don't really know me. So now I'm like, all right, I have to kind of be like him. What does that mean? So it's like, it is being the ultimate Gracie, is being like, you know what? I'm going to put it on the line. I'm going to fucking go to different academies and train with people and put myself on the line. I'm not going to be safe and just, you know, stay in my academy and be a teacher and that's it. Like, no. And so that's been my whole kind of path, you know? So it's not that I don't want to be Gracie or I don't think I should be a Gracie. It's, dude, I need to be Gracie. I need to be actually, if that even means anything. And then, but at the same time, I need to be Holic first. You know what I mean? And who I am as a person is not just this family enterprise and this family legacy of, you know, potential, you know, because there's a lot of potential of like, oh, you're a Gracie. You could be good. You could be. And it's like, dude, at the end of the day, you have to train. You have to fucking go through the dark where it's lonely and get out and make your way out and create those kinds of situations for yourself, or you're never going to understand what Elu Gracie felt or what Carlos Gracie felt, you know? And so, and that's what, like, Carlos and Elu, from the stories that I was told, were very risky human beings. They were, and they were calculated and they were spiritual, but they were extremely risky and they would test everything. They would, like, the whole culture was like, we're going to jump off this boat at night and save this guy. Why would we do that? That's Bruce Lee. That's martial arts. That's being centered. That's balancing. That's having loyalty, because loyalty is a form of balance, right? So just getting to the point where you're like, dude, I'm going to jump into the water and I'm going to balance myself in this situation. I'm loyal to myself and I'm testing myself. You know, so that's what I mean. And like, that's kind of the side of things that I've always kind of done. And now looking at it, I'm like, oh shit, like that was what they were on, you know, and they were really pushing the boundaries and really testing themselves. And that kept them grounded. And they deserve the gas or the energy that they got for their contribution at that point, you know, and the love they got. And they deserve to stand proud and have good posture about it and be, you know, so there it is, you know, and that's why we look to them, right? But we shouldn't make the mistake of only looking to them. We should be that. We should step into that. You know, what are you testing yourself or are you comfortable? You know, so that's for me is being a Gracie for myself, you know?
Man, you just, I'm not going to call you world peace anymore. You're kind of like Batman or Bane or like Superman. Come, like, we need you back in jiu-jitsu, no, bro. When are we going to get you? When are we going to get you back? Come on, man. When are we going to get you back? Come on. Like, you did your contribution a while ago. We need the next iteration of it in some way, shape, or form. So
we need to train, bro. We need to train. The next time I'm in LA, we'll train.
Hit me. I need to get beat up and learn some of that new wave stuff you're on.
I need to get beat up too, man. Invite some of your dangerous friends and let's do it. Invite Batman, Bushesha. Batman.
That's so good. All right. Well, let's pivot to the last one, Holic, and we'll close it up. Kind of like on the same tip that you're talking about right now, what's in all honesty, man, as a dad and as a father, and you hit something really early on the interview that I kind of like took to heart. And I think it's interesting and really cool is like, what would be your advice for just like people in general listening to this that are kind of like carrying weight from their fathers and their parents and from what they gave them and what they wanted to be. And then also like what they were supposed to build from that expectation of what they were handed. And what would be your advice to them and ultimately to your kids to what they're going to inherit from what you do? And just some of that advice leaving and closing with that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm glad that's very good, because I think that ties it together, because I like, ultimately we have to respect tradition, you know? And I think like, that's the thing that's the call it like a fulcrum, you know, like I just imagine myself swinging from a vine, like fucking, Tarzan or something. And the point is like, I'm taking the risk and I'm getting the experience, but the vine very much is like tradition, you know? And I think I'm very much part of my tradition and I respect like the whole legacy so much, but at the same time, I'm not going to sit on that, you know? So I think that's it. And I think you just have to have a, you have to want to have balance with that, the two sides of that part of yourself, you know? And I think that's it, man, you know, and go through processes where you don't take yourself too seriously. And, you know, like I've just been getting the feedback from the universe on certain people. And I think just being willing to put yourself in the position where you can learn who's around you. And, you know, and it's not like you need to go and create a catastrophe for yourself, but like really trying to understand like what kinds of relationships you have, you know, and trying to, you know, have conversations about like, what, how do you deal with loss? How do you deal with tragedy? Like, what's the mindset? You know, and I think there's a lot of cliches around it and a lot of people can answer from a book or whatever, but you know, I think there are certain people who you can tell that their answer is a little more, is rooted in a little more experience, you know? So just getting to know those people and kind of, and learning from them, you know, that's been kind of my focus at this point.
All right, Holic, man, thank you for the time, man. And what do we got? What do we got left, man? What's next for you, man? And where can we find you? Are you just chilling right now being pops, or you got something creeping in the future?
Man, just with the kids and, you know, doing the hard work, I feel like on anything that I want to do, you know, and I'm like, again, realizing like there's talking about something is like so easy, you know? And I think doing something is the hard part, you know? So I just like really trying to do what's right. And, you know, what I think is going to work, you know? And I think that includes like really being a good dad, like really being with my kids and making the most of it. I have four kids, man.
Wow. You know? Four kids now. Oh, I didn't even know it was four. Wild.
Yeah. So when I'm not even doing anything, I'm busy, you know, like, it's like, it just never ends. Like the fun literally never ends. And I mean that kind of as it's a slightly sarcastic fun, but it's, you know, it's also amazing, you know? So it's the kids, man, the kids are amazing and we're just making the most of it. And man, like my son, Kai, he trains, like he wants to train. He's just like, dude, what? And he's always asking me about martial arts. He's always like, dude, like he heard Bruce Lee's name in a podcast I was listening to. And he's like, who's Bruce Lee? And he's like asking me all these questions. And I'm like, just, you know, did you know Bruce Lee was born in San Francisco? You know, so we'll go into that, but just, you know, making kind of giving them the platform for where I'm at now is kind of like my biggest fear. You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do with it, with where you are, like to set your kids up? And you know, that's a big, big, tall order, man. So a lot of my energy is just focused on doing what I need to do for them. And, you know, here we go.
Well, perfect. Holic, man, thank you so much, man, for jumping on and thank you for blessing us. And I'm super duper stoked to catch up with you, man, and have you on. And I'm honored. So thank you very much for jumping on with us, man.
Hope it wasn't too crazy of a podcast for you.
It was great, man. Well, hey, you have a great weekend, man, and happy holidays. And I hope you and your family have a blessed one, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. You're the same. All right.
Later. Super stoked to have Holic on the podcast. Thank you very much for another episode, guys. Please like, subscribe, and follow us on Instagram.